start from the beginning of the Sedra. The Medrash says that the Torah was given through Midbar, Eish, and Mayim. I have a few different ways of understanding that Medrash. One is that these are the mediums through which a person can acquire Torah. The mediums are like a desert, like water, and like fire. Let's see what the qualities of each of them are. First of all, a desert is a place where you are, to a certain degree, separated from the pleasures of this world. A desert is a desert, right? It's bereft of all of the amenities of this world. If a person really wants to acquire Torah, then he has to not be dependent on physical material pleasures. Not that he can't have them. He can't be dependent on them. That is the meaning of the following Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. Kachi darka shel Torah. If you want to know if you are on the path of Torah, this is the derech of Torah. Pas b'melech tocha. Eat only bread and salt. Mayim b'mesura tishte. Drink measured out water, not even too much water. The al ha'aretz tishon. Don't sleep in a bed. Sleep on the floor. Uvechayitzar ata v'chayitzar tichya. And live a life of privation, of suffering. Uvetorah ata amel. But you're able to put your effort and toil into Torah. Im ata osekein. If you do that, ashrecha v'tovlach. You're fortunate and it's good for you. Ashrecha ba'olam hazeh. V'tovlach l'olam haba. It's a Mishnah in the last parak of Pirkei Avos. Now that Mishnah is very difficult, if you understand it literally. First of all, it seems to imply that anyone who eats more than bread and salt, or sleeps in a bed, is not Bederech HaTorah. If that's true, then I don't know anybody who's Bederech HaTorah. Because even the Gedolim that I knew slept in beds. And they ate more than bread and salt. The only person in my life that I knew who slept on the floor all the time was an old aunt that I had who had back trouble. So she's probably the only person I ever knew was Bederech HaTorah. And that's absurd. In addition, why does it say, if you do that, Ashrecha v'tovlach, you're fortunate and it's good for you, and then it repeats it. Ashrecha b'olam hazeh, you're fortunate in this world and it's good for you in the next world. Just say it simple. Why repeat it twice? And thirdly, I understand that it's good for you in the next world. But how in the world are you fortunate in this world? So therefore, I think the meaning of the Mishnah is completely different. The Mishnah means the following. You can eat steak, drink champagne, and sleep on a Sealy mattress. And you still could be Bederech HaTorah. That's not what the Mishnah is telling me. The Mishnah is telling me the following. What would you do and how would you feel if you didn't have those pleasures, those comforts? But you could still put effort in Torah and observe the Torah and learn the Torah. How would you feel? Im ata osekei nashrecha v'tovlach. If under those circumstances you would still feel fortunate and that it's good for you, because you understand that the main thing in your life is Torah and mitzvahs. That's what you put in this world. You weren't put in this world to eat steak. You weren't put in this world to sleep on a mattress. Those are all very nice enhancements of life, but that's not what life is. Life is not sleeping on a mattress. Life is not eating steak. Life is, you're here to prepare for Olam Haba, to do Torah and mitzvahs. Except, under many circumstances, eating that steak and sleeping in the bed will enhance your Torah life. So those are enhancements of life. They aren't life. So if you're missing those things, you're not missing life. You're not missing the purpose of life. You can still feel fortunate and good, even if you have to sleep on the floor and eat bread and salt and drink only water, because you still have the main purpose of life. You're Osik in Torah. So if, under those circumstances, you could still feel fortunate and good, then taka ashrecha b'olam hazeh v'tovlach l'olam haba. Because then you understand that those things that you're missing are not life. They're only enhancements of life. But your main life is what you do, Torah and Mitzvahs, in this world. That's what you're put here for. If you don't understand that, and if you would be missing those things, you'd be miserable, because you're missing what life is all about. Then you're not on the Derech HaTorah. Then your life is somewhere else. That's what it means. And therefore, a person has to receive the Torah through a desert. The desert is bereft of those physical and material pleasures if you understand that you don't become dependent on those things. And those things are not the ikkar of your life. And you're willing to go into a midbar in order to receive the Torah and make that the ikkar of your life, then you're able to receive the Torah through that medium called a midbar. What's the next medium? The next thing about a midbar? In a midbar, you create the environment. There is no environment. It's hefker. It's just empty space. A person can't approach the Torah with preconceived notions. You have your ideas, and now you're going to force the Torah to fit your ideas. Doesn't work. You have to open your mind and accept the Torah's viewpoint and ideas and let it form your opinions rather than trying to foist your opinions on the Torah and learn the Torah according to your preconceived notions. So those are two ideas of a midbar. A midbar is bereft of physical and material pleasures, and a person, in order to receive the Torah, has to be able to make himself not dependent on those things. Doesn't have to separate himself from them, but he has to make it that his life doesn't depend on those things. His feeling of osher in this world doesn't depend on those things. They can be enhanced by them, but those are not the cause of his feeling fortunate in this world. He knows that life is more than eating steak and drinking champagne. Those are extras. The ikkar, essence of life, is Torah and mitzvahs. And secondly, the midbar is a place where there is no environment. You create the environment. And therefore, don't approach the Torah with your own preconceived notions, opinions, and then try to foist them into the Torah. Let the Torah mold your opinions, your outlooks, and that is a way that you can receive the Torah. Secondly, the Torah has to be received through fire. Fire warms you up. You can't deal with Torah coldly, stoically. You have to have regesh. You have to have emotion. You have to be emotionally involved in the Torah, not just intellectually involved. At the same time, the Torah is like fire. It illuminates you. It lights the way. It educates you. You have to be open for the Torah to teach you, to show you the way, to enlighten you. So the Torah warms you up. You have to get regesh and emotion from the Torah. You can't deal with the Torah totally emotionless, just as from an intellectual standpoint. On the other hand, you can't deal with the Torah totally from an emotional standpoint. It has to enlighten you. It has to give you light also, not only heat. In addition, fire is a means to be able to create. All industry depends on fire. With fire, you can cook. With fire, you can melt metals and make them into things, and so on and so on. So fire is a tool of industry, of creation. You have to let the Torah be a tool of creation. You have to be creative in the Torah. You have to be able to take the Torah and use it and apply it to your life and mold your life according to the Torah. And fire also represents what's called Mesiras Nefesh, sacrifice. Right? And fire also represents burning away negative things. So the Torah you have to let the Torah burn away your Yetzer Hara. You have to let the Torah be a tool to be creative in this world. And the fire also represents spirituality. You have to let the fire lead you to spiritual things. So the Torah was given through Midbar, through a desert, because, like we said, the environment for receiving the Torah is like a desert. And you have to let the Torah be like fire. You have to let the Torah warm you up. enlighten you, give you, make that you sacrifice for Torah, that you realize the Torah reads you to Ruchnius and the Torah enables you to be creative. And finally, water. Water is a symbol of Tahara, both external and internal. The Torah, the water, purifies you by cleaning your body and also cleaning your soul when you go to a mikveh. In order to be able to receive the Torah, you have to do it with Tahara. You have to be pure. The more you purify yourself, the Torah goes to purity, not to impurity. So the more you purify yourself, right, the more you're able to absorb the Torah. In addition, water refreshes you. Right, going into a nice cold pool or whatever is refreshing. Torah should be refreshing. It shouldn't be something old and hackneyed, but always like new and refreshing and exciting. And that's also one of the mediums through what Torah is acquired. So Torah has to be acquired through the qualities of a midbar, through the qualities of fire, and through the qualities of water. Okay. Thinking, though, another idea. And that is the following. That fire and water are the main things. Fire and water is, Torah has to be like fire, like we explained, and Torah has to be like water. Torah has to be exciting and purifying, and it has to be emotional, and it has to be enlightening, and all the things we mentioned, fire and water. The Midbar, on the other hand, comes to tell me the following. The Midbar is the place where it's hard to find fire and it's hard to find water. You have to look around for water and many times dig for it because it's not there on the surface. And there's no wood and things growing in the Midbar. You have to bring it from other places sometimes to create that fire. That's what it means. Yes, Torah has to be nikneh with fire and with water. But you have to consider yourself in a Midbar. You have to work for that. It's not readily available. You're not going to find that fire readily available, and you're not going to find the water readily available. It's like in a midbar, where the fire and the water, both of them, are difficult to get, but that's what Torah is. In order to be kona Torah, you have to put in effort. It's not going to come easy. That's what Chazal say. If somebody tells you, yogati umasasi tamin, I put in effort, and I reached my goal, believe him. But if somebody says, lo yogati umasasi, don't believe him. You're never going to reach the goal without effort. So the Midbar represents the fact that the Eish and the Mayim, which are crucial to be able to receive the Torah, but you're not going to find them easily because it's like in a Midbar where the Eish and the Mayim are hard to come by, but if you want to find them, you can. If you put in the effort, that's how the Eish and the Mayim will have the effect, by putting an effort to get them, not by finding them readily available. Okay. Another idea in the desert is the following. I was thinking that maybe Torah is not the main thing in this world. Not the main thing in this world, but it's not mainly for this world. The purpose of this world and the purpose of Torah in this world is that you should be able to acquire Olam Haba. This world is only a transient place. Right? Olam HaZeh is Aroi, and Olam Haba is the Iker. And that's the whole lesson of Sukkah. This world is only a temporary place. It's a place, it's a ma'avar. It's a passage. It's not a place where you live. You pass through this world. And you, if you pass through this world properly, then you'll get what you're supposed to get in the world to come, which is the Iker. I was thinking, therefore, Torah in this world is like fire. Fire is a very ethereal, spiritual thing. It's not a physical thing. Can't hold on to it, right? It's not like other material things. And the Torah is like that. The Torah is really not from this world. The Torah is from a more spiritual world. But it's in this world so you can make use of it for the next world. So it's like fire. It's spiritual. It's in this world, but it's not something that you can hold on to. It's not something that you can deal with as other material things. It's a fourth state of matter. There's solids and liquids and gases, and fire is something called plasma. So like a fourth state of matter. It's not really the physical material world. It's a symbol of spirituality. Torah is also like water. It's not, the water itself is the ability to be able to live depends on water. Wherever they see planets or what's it called in space that have the ability to have water, there's the ability to have life. If there's no water, there's no life. The foundation of life is water, right? And therefore, Torah is the foundation of life. It's not a material thing for this world. It's what gives you life, and the life is for eternal life. So the Torah is a medium. It's a means. It's not the goal itself. Water is not life, but water is what enables you to have life. So the Torah enables you to have eternal life. But it's not for this world per se. It's in this world for the sake of the next world. And the same thing with the Midbar. The Midbar, no, people don't live in the Midbar except from Klal Yisrael for 40 years. You pass through the Midbar. Torah in this world is a ma'avar. It's a passageway. This is not the place where you get comfortable and it's the ikkar. The Torah in this world is for the purpose of passing you through this world and passing you on to the next world. It's like a Midbar. It's not a place to stay. It's a place to go through on your way to other places. The Midbar was not a place for Klal Yisrael to live. It was a place to go through to get to Eretz Yisrael. Sometimes you have to spend a lot of time in this world before you can get to your goal. But it's still only a passageway. It's not the goal. It's not the destination. It's a ma'avar. It's a passageway to a destination. So all of those three things represent the fact that Torah in this world, that is not the ikkar of the Torah. The Torah in this world is something ethereal, which represents the fact that it's from a different world. It's the foundation of life. Right? It enables you to live. But life is eternal life. And it's a passageway from this world to the next. It's not the place where you take up residence. That's another idea of Midbar, Eish, and Mayim. Another thing, in the beginning of the Sedra. This Sedra, the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar, Parshas Bamidbar, starts with what happened Bamidbar Sinai, Bachodesh HaSheni, L'shono HaShenis, L'tzeisom Yeres Mitzrayim. The second month of the second year when we left Egypt. In next week's Sedra, Noso, in the end of the Sedra, it speaks about the Hakamas HaMishkan, when the Mishkan was erected, and the sacrifices of the Nesiim, which were brought on the first day up till the 12th day after the Mishkan was erected and dedicated. When did that take place? It says the beginning of the first month. Rosh Chodesh Nisan of the second year is when they put up the Mishkan. And from Rosh Chodesh Nisan till the 12th of Nisan, the Nesiim brought their korbanos. So the Chor is out of order. The events of Bamidbar are the second month of the second year, and the events in the end of Naso is the first month of the second year. So we learn from here, Ein Mukdam U'Me'ucher BaTorah. The Torah does not necessarily follow a chronological sequence. Sometimes the Torah goes out of sequence to teach me something. It doesn't mean that the Torah is not in any chronological order. It normally is. But if the Rabban Shom felt that there was a lesson to be taught, and in order to teach that, you had to write things out of their natural order, then he wasn't makbid on the chronology, he was makbid more on the lesson. So what's the lesson? Why did the Torah tell me the events of the second month of the second year before the events of the first month of the second year? What's the purpose of it? So I think the Torah wanted to tell us the following. What were the events of the second month? That Klal Yisrael were counted, They were separated into an organized tzibur, four different camps, each one with three shvatim, where they camped around the Mishkan. The events of the first month is the erection of the Mishkan itself. Which is the ikar? Which is the main thing? The Mishkan or Klal Yisrael being around that Mishkan? That's what the Torah is telling you. If you want to know what's first, what's the ikar, is that Klal Yisrael should dwell around the Mishkan. Not that there should be a Mishkan. The Mishkan is not the main thing. The main thing is how Klal Yisrael relates to that Mishkan. So first I'm going to tell you about how Klal Yisrael can relate to the Mishkan. And then I'll tell you about the Mishkan itself. Because don't think the Mishkan is the ikar. Klal Yisrael is the ikar. Klal Yisrael, because there's a Mishkan, so Klal Yisrael have to dwell around the Mishkan. No. Because there's a Klal Yisrael who has to dwell around the Mishkan, that's why there's a Mishkan. Klal Yisrael are the most important thing here. And therefore the Torah first speaks about the Seder, the order, the foundation, the infrastructure of Klal Yisrael, and that it's around the Mishkan to tell me, don't think the Mishkan is the ikar here. The Mishkan is only important because Klal Yisrael use it as something to surround and to understand how to focus their life on what that Mishkan represents. But the Mishkan is not important in itself, it's important in how it affects the Jewish people. So first I'll tell you how the Mishkan affects the Jewish people, then I'll tell you about the Mishkan. That I think is an idea. In addition, this whole Indian of Degolim, that the Jewish people surrounded the Mishkan and were separated into different camps with different banners. Every camp, the Ramban says, had a flag. And every flag had on it something unique to that shevet, and a color that represented the shading, the midos of that shevet. Every color represents a different midah. And every flag was a different color with a different symbol on it that represent the uniqueness, the individuality of that shevet. So Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky asks, why, when we left Mitzrayim, didn't HaKadosh Baruch Hu right away separate us into Degolim? And separate us into different tribes and different groups or whatever? Why did it have to wait till the second year to make this structure, this infrastructure? He says, because if you divide the Jewish people into individual groups, that destroys unity. Unless you have something that unifies all of them, where they take their individuality and use it towards the common good. Before there was a Mishkan, before they got the Torah, and the Torah then continued on in the Mishkan, the giving of the Torah, the Mishkan was the continuation of Har Sinai. That was the purpose of the Mishkan. It was the continuation of God's presence amongst the Jewish people. Our Har Sinai continued on in the Mishkan. The Mishkan was the continuation of Har Sinai. Once you had a Har Sinai and a Torah that could unite the Jewish people, when we got the Torah, we're ki'ish echad b'lev echad. Like one person with one heart. The Torah unites us. Gives us something to unify around. And the Mishkan then became the continuation of Torah, where the Jewish people were united all around the Mishkan. Once you have something to unify the Jewish people, then you can break them up into groups. Because then every group is going to be unique, individual, but not separate from everybody else. To contribute your individuality towards the common good. That is the reason. But before you have that which unifies everybody, if you separate them into groups, you're causing disunity. Because everybody's for themselves. Everybody's for their little group. But if every little group is part of a unified effort, and I contribute my unique part towards that unified effort, then that's fine. But if I think that I'm unique and I'm not united with everybody else, that's negative. So until the Torah was given and the continuation of the Torah was had in the Mishkan, you couldn't have separate groups. Once you had that unifying factor, then you could have separate groups. It wouldn't be a disunifying factor. It would just enhance that unity by everybody contributing their unique part. And that's Klal Yisrael. We have mitzvahs that everybody has to do, and we have our unique part in the mitzvahs. Everybody has their unique part in Torah, their unique approach to mitzvahs or whatever. Everybody's mitzvah is different, what you think and what your emotions are or whatever. And that is represented by the fact that the 12 Nesiyim in the end of Nasa brought the same carbon, but the Torah mentions each and every one because each one was different. Each one brought it with his emotion, with his idea, with his background or whatever. So they all could be doing the same thing, but each one is an individual. So the Torah, on the one hand, unites us. At the same time, it gives us the ability to contribute our unique portion, which is different than everybody else's portion. Both things are important. And in this, there are basically three kinds of unity. There's Kahal, Adas, Yisrael. Kahal means people gathering together. They gather together in one group and do mitzvahs the same, everybody together. That's called Koach HaRabim, Tefillah B'Tzibur. They're all davening the same tefillah, except there's strength in numbers. The power of numbers. Barov Am Hadras Melech. There's more covet to the Rabbanu Shalom when more people are doing a mitzvah together. Same mitzvah. They're all doing the same thing, but they're doing it together. That's one kind of unity. That's a kahal. Then there's an Eda. An Eda is not people gathered together, congregated together, doing the same thing together. They're maybe spread out all over the whole world. What unites them is not proximity, not place, but ideas. We all have the same ideas, the same goals, the same principles. Eda comes from the Lashon of Edus. We all testify to the same ideas. That's what unites us. You can have Jews in China, in Czechoslovakia, in Mexico, and in America, and in Eretz Yisrael. They are divided and separated by place, but they're united by common goals, common ideas, common standards and values. That's what unites us. That's Eda. And Eda also could come from the Lashon of Ya'ad. You go to the airport next, look up at the big board, and where it says destination in English, it says Ya'ad in Hebrew. Ya'ad means a destination. We're all going the same place. We all have the same goals, the same destination. That's what unites us. That's an Eda. And there also, everybody has the same principles, same beliefs, same standards, values, or whatever, and they're united by a common goals, ideas, and standards. That's Eda. And then there's Yisrael. Yisrael is the other kind of unity, where everybody's not doing the same thing, where everybody's doing something different, but doing it for the same purpose and contributing their unique portion towards everybody, towards the common goal. The first two is no individuality. Everybody has to conform to the same standards, values, same actions, just do it together. Yisrael is the Rosh Tevos of Yesh Shishim Ribui Osios LaTorah. There are 600,000 letters to the Torah. Every Jew is like a letter in the Torah. 600,000 Jews, 600,000 letters in the Torah. There's only one problem. There is not 600,000 letters in the Torah. So what do you tell me? Okay, it's a gematria. So it's, you know, plus or minus one or two, doesn't make a difference. How many letters are in the Torah? 304,588, which is half of 600,000. So something's missing, right? We're missing about 300,000 letters out of the 600,000. So where are the 600,000 letters to the Torah, yeah?
Yeah, but aren't there also a lot more than 600,000 Jews anyway?
Yeah, that is explained the following. The number of Jews in this week's Sedra is 600,000 plus a little bit more, okay? There are 600,000 root souls of the Jewish people, okay? There are clusters of neshamas. We all belong to a cluster. In a cluster, there could be a lot of people, a lot of souls. But they all have one root soul, and there are 600,000 root souls. That's why in the Midbar also, there were women, there were people less than 20, older than 60, weren't counted in the 600,000. But everybody is part of a cluster. The men between 20 and 60 represented the root souls of the Jewish people, and everybody is part of one of those root souls, which is like a cluster of souls. So there are 600,000 clusters of souls. That's what it means, 600,000 Jews. But there aren't 600,000 letters in the Torah. There's only 300,000. And there are many answers to that question. Some say you count the Targum. Some say that each letter is made up many of different letters. So you count, like an Aleph is a Vav and a Yud, so it counts like two or three letters. But I don't think there's any question. It'd only be a question if it says, Yesh Shishim Ribi Osios BaTorah. There are 600,000 letters in the Torah. There aren't 600,000 letters in the Torah. But if that's what it said, it wouldn't spell Yisrael. It would spell Yisra'ab. Yesh Shishim Ribi Osios BaTorah. Yisra'ab. In order to spell Yisrael, it has to be La Torah. Not in the Torah, but to the Torah. Which I think means the following. There are 300,000 written letters in the Torah. But you have to add another 600,000 letters to make the Torah complete, which is something else the Zohar says. Say it to Zohar. The Zohar says, Yisrael, the Oraisa, the Kudshabrichu Chadu. The Jewish people, the Rabban Shem, and the Torah are one. That means if you don't connect the Jewish people to the Torah is not a Torah, because it's one. And if you don't connect them both to the Rabban Shem, neither one exists. The Torah not connected to God, or the Jewish people not connected to God, or not a Jewish people, not a Torah. So in order for the Torah to be complete, it has to be connected to the Jewish people. The Jewish people have 600,000 letters, meaning 600,000 root souls. Yesh Shishim Ribi Osios La Torah. You have to add another 600,000 letters to the Torah, to the written Torah. What are those 600,000 letters? The souls of the Jewish people. And just like in the written Torah, every letter is different. There's not just 27 different letters. Every letter is unique. The Beis and Bereishis is not the same thing as the Reish or the Aleph or the Shin, that's for sure. But it's not even the same as the Beis and Bara. Because the Beis and Bereishis has nothing before it, and Reish, Aleph, Shin, Yud, Tov after it. And the Beis and Bara has a word before it, and only Reish, Aleph after it. The where it is, what it's followed by, what it's preceded by, which sefer it's in, which pasuk it's in, makes it different. The word lemor is mentioned in the Torah a million times, but it's different every time, because what comes before it, in what context it is, and what parsha it is different. So just like every letter in the written Torah is a unique letter, because of its position, every Jew is unique. No two people are the same. And each one has their specific part in making the Torah complete. And if any one part is missing, the Torah is not complete. If you're missing a letter in the Torah, it's not a Torah. It's puzzle. So that Yisrael is the individuality in Yiddishkeit. There is conformity. Everybody doing the same thing, thinking the same thing, and there's also a place for individuality, where everybody has their unique part to contribute. Those are the three kinds of unity. The first two are necessary before you can have the third one. Because if you have the third one of everybody's unique, different part, and there's nothing to unite you, right, into one group, then those unique individuality will be disunity, will separate people, will not unite them. But if you have the Kahal and the Eda around the Mishkan, around the Torah, ke'ish echad b'lev echad, then you can have the individual parts, and it won't be disunifying, just the opposite. It'll enhance the unity by everybody contributing their unique part. So that is, there's only one thing. 600,000, and it has to do with this sedra too. 600,000 is the number of the Jewish people not counting the Levium. So it was 603,000, whatever. Was a small addition. The Levium were 22,000 more. That's really significant. Where are the Levium in this Torah of the Jewish people? Shishim ribui osios la Torah is the Jewish people without the Levium. What happened to the Levium? So I was thinking one time, that there's something else in the Torah besides letters. There's what's called sirtut. Sirtut are lines. Before you write a Sefer Torah, you have to line the parchment. Not with ink, but with a blunt instrument that indents the parchment. If you look at a Sefer Torah, you'll see that there is almost invisible lines at the top of the letters are written with their top on that line. Purpose of the line is to keep the letters straight. Keep the letters straight. So that's part of the halacha lo moshe Sinai v'sefer Torah. You must first line the parchment by indenting in the parchment. Not with something, not with a color, but just indent it into the parchment. That's called sirtut. So I said, you know what? Maybe the Leviim are the sirtut. The 600,000 Jews are the letters, and the Leviim are like the lines. Why? They keep the rest of the Jews straight. They're supposed to teach us, and they give us something to look up to. Right? They are on a higher level. Right? They have more mitzvahs and more isurim. So the Leviim, they're Kohanim, and Leviim are the line above the letters to give us something to strive for, to look up to, and to keep us straight. Okay, very nice idea. Then I started looking into it, and it comes out amazing. I counted how many lines there are in a Sefer Torah. I didn't think a Sefer Torah did it. Then there's a custom how many lines you write in a column and how many columns there are. So it was very easy to know how many columns there are in a Sefer Torah, how many lines in a column, multiply one by the other, and you have how many lines there are in a Sefer Torah. How many lines are there in a Sefer Torah? 11,000, approximately. 11,000 lines. That's a Sefer Torah of 300,000 letters. If you had a Sefer Torah, the Sefer Torah that's made up of the Jewish letters, the Jewish souls, is 600,000 letters. So you have to double that. How much is double 11,000? 22,000. How many Leviim were there? 22,000. Perfectly. The amount of Leviim is exactly the amount of lines that would be in a 600,000 letter Sefer Torah. Because in a 300,000, our regular Sefer Torah is 11,000 lines. So it fits perfectly. That's the Leviim. The Leviim are the sirtut. They're not the letters. There's only 600,000 letters in the Sefer Torah of the Jewish people, of the Jewish people's souls. But you need also lines. The Leviim are the lines, right? Even Levi sounds like a line anyway. But in any case, that they are the lines, they're the sirtut that give the letters, keeps them straight, and gives them something to look up to. Okay. We will suffice with that.